Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Silicon Dreams 1550 AM. I'm your host Charlene and today we have joining us Subha Chugh, a trailblazing first generation lawyer whose journey epitomizes passion, determination and a relentless pursuit of innovation. Welcome Subha, it's lovely to have you on our show today.
Thank you so much, Charlene. You've been really kind with your description. I don't think I do justice to those words.
Oh, absolutely. I believe you do. And, you know, with that, now we have our listeners from all over the world listening to this, and they obviously want to learn so much more about you, your journey and what you do. So, you know, I love the fact that you mentioned earlier about you starting or igniting debates within your own family and then advocating for legal clarity in the tech sphere. And, you know, here your narrative is kind of like just beautiful. So with that, I want to get right into your journey. So, Subha, tell us a little bit about your journey from law school to the tech industry, which is fascinating. Can you share more about, you know, what inspired you to make this unconventional career shift?
Ever since I was in college, I just wanted to somehow become the part of the next Google. I was like, this is what I want to do. Forget everything traditional. That's it. That's how I set my life. And I was relentless looking for startups, student-led companies. And even throughout my college, I was frequently collaborating with engineering students because, you know, that's where the techie brain lies. And I was, you know, just really, really driven by this sense of I want to earn and, you know, support myself and stop relying on my parents as soon as possible. So I think from day one, probably like my first semester, I was scouring. I was on the lookout already. In fact, I did join a couple of small student-led startups at that time. And, you know, I worked with them. When it comes to startups, you don't really just, you know, I'm sure everybody who's worked in a startup would relate. You don't join in one profile. You just join and you're doing like 50,000 things altogether. So that's how it began. And eventually my hunting led me to Trell, which was at that time an upcoming e-com. At that time, they were a travel-based blog. So you could post photos and stories of your travels and sort of create a trail. Mm-hmm. That's where the Trell word came from. Mm-hmm. And I was, I think, one of their very first employee would not be the correct term, but I was one of the first people to start working with them, like maybe when they had a team of 5 to 10 people. Mm-hmm. And I started working with them. I worked with them for about a year or two. And of course, at that time, they were like, come to Bangalore, we'll offer you a full-time position. But I was still in law school and I was like, I can't do that. I need to graduate. And so that was my first foray into tech. And while I was working in traditional, law firms and legal offices as well, I did find that there was a huge, that level of excitement, that level of doing something new, foraging around. And when it comes to a traditional law office, you have A, B, C set out and you know what path you have to take. But this industry, the tech industry, the lacunas in law, the, you know, the whole figuring it out as you go was just super exciting. And I was like, this is it. This is where I want to go.
That's beautiful. I mean, definitely that leap from, you know, traditional law to the world of Web3 and tech must have been quite a leap, I must say. And, you know, as amazing as it does seem, I'm pretty sure you've, you know, there have been some challenges along the way and which you've obviously overcome, not yet to overcome. So what were these specific challenges that, you know, our listeners can probably learn from and how did you overcome them? And if there are any current challenges that you are still facing?
The biggest challenge when I began working was, of course, you know, people don't understand what kind of industry you're working for. It's a challenge to convince your family, to convince yourself, first and foremost, you know, because you're just out there and working in a very uncertain environment. In practice, one of the biggest challenges is the fact that when it comes to tech always rushes ahead and legislation lags behind. Mm-hmm. So we're here, but everything else is here in terms of legal understanding, legislation, people's experience, even advocates, lawyers, professionals, consultants with, you know, 30, 40 years under their belt, because the industry is so new, they're novices as well. So this was the biggest challenge, but also the biggest pro, because as a novice, I was somewhere or the other at par with somebody with 40 years experience, because we both have zero knowledge about this Web3 industry. So it was a huge bonus in the sense that, hey, we're at par. I am at par with somebody who's got 40 years of experience, but also a challenge because there are questions that I can't answer, that don't have answers, that you need somebody to guide you for. So the biggest challenge in this industry has been that there's not been any guiding force.
Right.
There's not been any clear, set out, hey, this is what you do to achieve this. There's just no clarity. So every second you're just navigating, uncertainty, you're navigating a cloudy environment, you're always wondering what happens next. You have to really rely on what you know and have a foresight and predict that most probably this is how it will go, or this is what the future will entail. And and the biggest challenge that I still face to this day, and the biggest challenge that I warn anybody who wants to enter into this industry, is the sheer volatility of it. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a, traditional, safe, comfortable work environment where you're guaranteed an income or guaranteed a position or guaranteed a straight, stable, upwards curve career, this is not it.
Yeah.
We never know what happens tomorrow, who decides to just ban crypto, or who decides to regulate this industry in a way that negatively affects it all. So every second is just, we're just how we say it in Hindi, har pal ke mohtaaj hai. We just have to wait and see. Every second, we're just kings of each second, and we never know what the next second will bring. So that's a huge challenge.
Yeah, in the tech and Web3, especially Web3 industry, I think everything is changing every second. So it's really hard to keep up. And like you said, I think the pros of being in Web2 or, in the corporate world in general, is that, you have your, what the goal is, what's going to happen next to some extent. And, you're going to get that salary, like you said. But with Web3, it's very different, especially in a field like law, where, and especially in a country like India, because there's no guiding force at all, right? But I think that's also the beauty of it, taking that risk, starting early, like being on par with, you said, like a very experienced person. So, that just is the beauty of Web3. It's a world within another world. And speaking of that, coming to, joining Polygon with zero knowledge about crypto sounds like, diving into the deep end. So how did you quickly adapt and, excel in this new environment?
Actually, joining Polygon with zero knowledge of crypto was a good thing, in the sense that, you're not afraid of something you don't know. So I didn't know I was jumping into the deep end.
Right.
I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And how it went was, it was lockdown. Mm-hmm. I was still a law student. I was a fourth year law student at that time. I had an internship lined up with the law firm that works with Ernst & Young in India. Mm-hmm. But of course, they shut down their offices. And, we were just all sitting at home. We got nothing else to do. And there was also like a simultaneous small boom in e-commerce startups, all these, new age tech companies that were coming up. So I was just, I think everybody would relate, being in the comfort of your own home and being behind a screen gives you a strange confidence.
Yes.
I was just sending my CV to random positions for random companies, as if, I wasn't even qualified. And I was just like, who cares? I might as well. And I came across Polygon, and they had this JD lined up, and the JD just mentioned, we're looking for somebody. They didn't even say we're looking for a lawyer. They didn't say we're looking for somebody qualified in XYZ jurisdiction with ABC or, 10, 15 years of experience. They just said, we want somebody who can do, and a list of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote an email to them, and I was like, I can do these list of things.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would like to, I would like to give this a shot. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, I heard back from them, and I legit thought it was a scam. When I heard back, because I was like, who accepts a fourth year law student's application this way?
Yeah.
But and that's, I mean, I got accepted. I had an interview. I qualified the first round. I went to the HR round, and afterwards I was just, I submitted my credentials and all that, and then I was asked for my degree, and I said, I'm still a fourth year law student. And the next day I received a rejection. And I was like, okay, fine, understandable. And I wrote to them that, I understand that you've rejected me. I would appreciate if you could just give me some feedback.
Yeah.
And immediately the HR lady who interviewed me called me and she said, hey, we just like, we have a corporate policy. You're not qualified. You don't have a degree. You're not, you haven't even graduated college yet. So how do we keep you? Yeah. How do we keep you? We can't keep you as an employee. So of course that's understandable, but the very next day I got another call from this that I had, and she said, we are very keen to keep you. We want you on board. So we'll keep you as an intern till you graduate. And then we'll offer you a full-time position. And, I started immediately. I think that day I started, and it was just, my first week was chaos. I was like, what is this crypto? What is this fiat? What is this? What is happening? But, and that's the thing, even, you know, there's a hesitancy you have that, do I even want my seniors to know that I don't even know what this is? I'm wiser now. And now I ask my seniors, even if I'm clueless. So that's something that I would say, always ask stupid questions. Do not be afraid of asking stupid questions. And I think it was a combination of luck. They needed somebody of my skills at that time.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I don't know, maybe my determination to just, or curiosity to just figure out what was happening. I think one of the biggest highlights of my career was, I think 2-3 weeks after I joined Polygon, we did a corporate dealing with Adidas. And there was a contract that had to be signed, and there were a couple of terms of that contract that I was given the contract to vet, and there were a couple of terms in those contracts that I was not sure of. And you know, I'm pretty sure I would do a much better job today, but at that time I was like, hey, this doesn't make sense. And they were like, cool, let's set up a meeting with the team from Adidas. And I don't know if this is how they meant for it to go. I don't know if my superiors just had so much confidence in me, but somehow I, a fourth year student, ended up representing Polygon in a meeting with Adidas's American Council, with Adidas's local head of legal, four top legal counsel from Adidas. I'm the only one from Polygon. And
wow.
I'm like, the kind of stupid questions I asked at that time, I was just like, I have no clue what's even happening.
No, that's great.
But,
kudos on that. That's amazing. And I think a lot of our listeners right now, you know, are probably drawing inspiration from this story and this journey, which I can resonate with too. By the way, I had no idea what Web3 was. I had no idea when I got the call for the job. I was like, okay, they wanted somebody with my skill. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. But that's the, you know, what you said was so correct about, you know, just knowing that you can ask stupid questions in Web3, because it's evolving. And, you know, it's always good to ask and be clear. And, you know, then make mistakes and learning. It's a learning process at the end of the day. But yeah, that's beautiful. That's definitely inspiring.
Oh, and there's another secret to this. I feel like nobody really knows what they're doing. So you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be fine. Nobody knows better than you anyway. So you'll be fine.
That's true. And I think that's what we're also aiming with in the community of Web3, to get people from traditional fields and, you know, like especially from Web2, to seamlessly onboard them into Web3. So I think, you know, that's just the beauty of it again. And, you know, with this achievement, congratulations on also being a part of India's 105th Unicorn Fire. That's amazing. Just to see women in the field is beautiful in the first place. So what role did you play in their journey? And, you know, what lessons did you take away from the experience?
Fire was my first solo project. That was when, you know, I was at Polygon. I still had a team. At Fire, I was just taking care of the legal department on my own. This is what I realized that a lot of startups need. They cannot afford a full-fledged law firm, and they cannot afford to have a full-on legal department. I realized with Fire that people need somebody who can take care of everything, at least to a certain level. So I was, you know, doing their general contracts. I was taking care of compliance. I was taking care. There was a huge element of HR involved, you know, formulating policies. I was doing internal company policies. I was handling negotiations. I wouldn't call it dispute resolution in that sense, because, you know, when you're a big company, there are always disgruntled people, be it employees, investors, parties, vendors. So everybody wants to, you know, send you threatening emails and messages. So be it, you know, negotiating with them, coming to a settlement. So FIRE really taught me how to work with non-legal departments in a better way. I cannot, you know, expect a non-lawyer to understand my jargons, to understand what I want. There's a certain way that communication needs to happen interdepartmentally. It really taught me how to work in a remote setup. Because, see, of course, Polygon was remote as well, but once again, I was still in a cloud of my own team. But here it was the entire company that I was working with, and I was handling everything legal on my own. So that really, you know, I feel like it really transformed me. The team was super supportive there. Always, you know, we brought in external counsel wherever I needed support. And yeah, that was very enriching. I would say it was quite a journey. It really also taught me how Web3 industry and how companies in the Web3 industry function. What are the ethos? What are the, you know, whether you like it or not, things don't happen in Web3 the same way they happen in Web2. A Web2 company, Web3 companies are much more personal, I would say. There's an element of, you know, brotherhood amongst companies, even quote unquote rivals.
Yes.
You know, you don't have those kind of set processes of there's this whole 50 step procedure that everything needs to go through. People want things to be done quickly. People like to do things on a personal level. So all of those things, challenges, however you'd like to word it, really taught me how to navigate them.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I, like you said, Web3 is very different from Web2 in that sense. I think we're very community oriented and very collaborative. Yeah. With rivals too, which is, I don't know, maybe a good thing. But so far it definitely is, and yes, very personal. So, you know, now as a consultant, you know, you're working with various clients. So how do you kind of navigate the diverse challenges that they present?
By not sleeping. By constantly sacrificing on sleep, food, a social life, and just almost always constantly working. That's the key to it that I hope nobody learns.
Yes,
that's my bad takeaway.
Yes, I mean, also, yeah, working with, like, you know, different time zones, you have to be up at times that you don't possibly want to be, but
there's a huge volume of work that you have to, you know, go through. And this is something that's not specific to, you know, Web3 or legal in that sense. So anybody juggling multiple clients would understand that switch you have to make. You know, you're working on one client or you're working on one project. It needs to be represented, communicated, done in a particular way that client likes it. And the moment you switch, you need to leave that entire thing behind and switch into a completely different, you know, persona, because this communication style, working style, everything is just entirely different. So
yes,
there's a lot of juggling, you know, involved in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And I would like, don't do it. I don't know why I do it.
Yeah, no, but yeah, I mean, the hustle is real at the end of the day. And, you know, now coming to your involvement with the Learn to Earn platform, you know, how do you, because, you know, in Web3 right now, learning and the education is an important part, because people are still new to the idea of what Web3 really is. So how do you see it shaping the future of, you know, education?
In my opinion, that Learn to Earn platform is one of the few platforms that really, really embodies the ethos of Web3, like the industry Web3 in general. Of course, we have blockchain, we have tech, we have everything else, but Web3 also is a, I would say, philosophical movement, in the sense that we want decentralization, we want user empowerment. You know, for example, we don't want to pay to see something. We should be paid to see ads. You know, that this is a common example that's thrown around. So this is what the Learn to Earn platform sort of functions at. If, you know, you're a project and you want your users to learn about you, you want your users to learn about something, this platform basically facilitates that conversation. And it's a platform where the user gets rewarded for learning about them. So it incentivizes education, you know, in that aspect, that you get something out of it rather than you having to, you know, pay to learn. So, of course, you know, it may not work in the traditional education sector in that aspect, but I would say that this really works in, you know, an awareness causing way, because when you incentivize something, it really promotes that. So it really promotes awareness, it promotes brand, you know, brand imaging. It I think it really is something that can revolutionize marketing. So in that aspect, you know, this is something that that definitely going to become mainstream shortly. And hey, they're one of the few companies in Web3 that are 100% profitable. They have a solid business model. They have everything figured out. So that's always a pleasant surprise to come across.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is true. And that's a beautiful, you know, program. And, you know, now in your opinion, since, you know, you're from the legal background, I want to know what are some of the key legal considerations, you know, individuals or companies should kind of keep in mind when they're navigating through the world of crypto or Web3?
I would say get a professional involved as soon as possible. Don't wait for your product to be out in the market for 3 years, then make a budget for legal and get somebody on board. Get somebody involved right there from the forefront, from the product development stage itself. In fact, I myself have worked with a couple of projects in the past where I was involved from the project development stage, and there are a lot of things that a legal professional or professionals in general would bring to the table in terms of, you know, product development. For example, your wallet needs to have certain features from the get-go. You cannot build them in later on once you have a user base that's used to using your wallet a certain way. Or, you know, if you're building a particular platform, there's certain compliance issues that you need to be wary of and you need to take care. So I would say the number one you know, thing that you should ideally do, of course, practically speaking, it's a different story altogether. But the number one recommendation would be to involve a platform as soon as, involve a professional as soon as possible. And following that, I would say that, you know, when you have to take care of what would be the legal implications of your project, you have to take care of two things. One is, where are you based out of? You know, where are you setting up your corporate structure? And two, where do you anticipate your users coming from, or which jurisdiction or what kind of users are you targeting? So even if you're based out of India, but you want to target US customers, you want to have a US consumer base, you have to be careful of US laws as well. So this is a dichotomy that you really, really need to take care of. And the number three biggest thing that I see people doing in Web3 is, don't get attracted to so-called easy jurisdictions and run there. You do not need to set up something in Dubai. You don't need to set up something in Singapore just because, you know, quote unquote, they are good for business. It is going to cost you. Right. Setting up companies outside is still going, it's going to be much more costly to conduct business out of these entities and ensure their compliance than it would be to, you know, stay in your home jurisdiction and get something done. So unless it's really professionally required or recommended, don't just randomly go to jurisdictions and start setting up entities.
Right. No, that definitely, you know, makes a lot of sense. And for our listeners, I hope you've taken that down. So yeah, the first step is, like you said, to involve a professional so that you have everything in place, and to note down where you are based out of, where you want to set up your business, and where your users are based out of. And yeah, not to fall for the trap of just setting it out there, because it is going to cost for sure. And like you said, not everything in Web3 is profitable right now. So we have to, you know, work on those things. All right. And that brings us to our last question. So Subha, as a first generation lawyer and trailblazer in the tech industry, right, what advice do you have for aspiring professionals looking to carve their own path in Web3?
Do it. Don't be afraid, but be prepared for a lot of uncertainty. And the entire industry, Web3, it doesn't function like any other traditional industry. You don't have, you know, if you become the part of some set good company, you don't have a sure shot way up. You don't have traditional recruiters, you don't have traditional recruiting mechanisms, you don't have poachers in that aspect. You really, the Web3 industry relies heavily on, like the blockchain does, proof of work and networking. So you really constantly have to be out there. You constantly have to be, you know, working on something. You constantly need to put your proof of work out there. So of course, you need to be a salesman in every other job, but in the Web3 industry, you need to be a salesman first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So if you're really somebody who's looking for a comfortable, cushiony, you know, like some place where you don't have to constantly keep hustling, have a normal sleep routine, I would say maybe avoid Web3. But if you're somebody who is excited by challenges, who enjoys a high risk and high reward lifestyle, I would say Web3 industry is definitely for you. In
Absolutely.
fact, I would say the culture of global workforce, remote work especially, is so strong in the Web3 industry. I am frankly surprised why we as a country, I mean, fine, we are lagging behind when it comes to regulations and ease of business, but we as a country should be at the forefront of providing labor and employees for these kind of companies, because all you need is an internet connection and a device
That's right.
and the ability to converse in English, unfortunately for anti-English people, but you need a common language to converse with. And you can be sitting in the remotest part of the country, belong to whatever section of the society, and still be earning a bomb. I myself personally know a lot of people who have a literal rags to riches story because the Web3 industry gave them this platform. So
That is
if
true.
you're somebody who enjoys that, somebody who can hustle, and somebody who's prepared to take high risks, it's extremely rewarding. Go for it.
That is true. You heard it, guys. Go for it and take that risk, but also DYOR. This is not financial advice, but friendly advice, I would say. And yeah, definitely. I think the hustle is real in both the worlds, whether it's Web 2 or Web 3. Just Web 3 is more fun, in my opinion. So, and yeah, if you love challenges, go ahead and do that. And yeah, I think with that, that's a wrap, guys. Thank you, Subha, so much for joining us on the show, keeping it light, keeping it fun, and still educating our listeners today. We really had fun today. I hope you did too.
Oh, a lot. Made my day.
I'm glad. I'm glad. So yes, and to all our fantastic listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for more thrilling tales and exciting escapades from the world of Web3 and AI.